are listening to Fast Track Podcast, the place to be to fast track your personal finance or fast track your business or both. Through a series of conversations with those who have learned it, done it, and made it. Before starting the episode, I have very exciting news to share with you. I am collaborating with financial imagineer Matthias Richter to launch the Fast Track Money course. This six-week online course is designed to help young professionals in their 20s to early 40s to learn how to save more, earn more, and invest, using money as a tool to fulfill your dreams. We teach you the proven method that Matthias has been using himself in the last 20 years and achieved financial independence. So sign up today on fasttrack.live/moneycourse to transform your relationship with money from today. Today, I have a very special guest, and her name is Lisa. And Lisa is a lawyer, senior legal counselor, an author, and also a property investor. And she started her property investment by owning and controlling a studio flat in Cambridge and two studio flats in Liverpool. And she's also investing with her brother, providing emergency housing. Now they have 36 units, and they will donate profit from one unit to charity and reinvest the rest of the capital. And she has gained tremendous experiences over the years with property investment, and she has achieved great success with it. And today I'm so honored to have her here to share with you what has she done in the past to achieve great results, and what are the do's and don'ts so that you can start with your first real estate property investment with a success. And welcome to Fast Track Podcast, Lisa.
Hi, Yessi. Thank you so much for having me. It's a great honor to be on this podcast with you. Yeah, so that was a quite accurate introduction of myself. To be honest, I started investing already back in 2008, but that was more random than having a strategy. We just passed by a property. There was a development, and I thought it was a good location in Cambridge, so let's just buy it. And at that time, prices were quite affordable. And then in 2014, we bought another unit, and that one is in Liverpool. And we didn't do anything after that, so I just stayed quite passive and didn't reinvest the money at all. I didn't think about these things. It was just something in the background. It generated a little bit of extra money, but we spent it all. And this is something you should not do if you are investing. You should reinvest the profits, the money that you make, because then you will have that compound effect. So to be honest, my professional property investment journey, or investment in general, only started at the beginning of this year. So I joined a mastermind. I actually joined more than one. I started last year with another mastermind. But I knew that I wanted to create passive income, because with passive income, I can then achieve financial freedom. And this is my ultimate goal, is to be able to live my life by design, to decide how and when I'm going to work. And I figure out that property will allow me to do this. But I didn't have all the tools. I didn't have the network. I didn't have all the knowledge. I did have some knowledge from my amateur investment days. And this is why I sought out these different mastermind groups to learn more, but also to network. And it's been an amazing journey, because if you had spoken with me at the beginning of this year, I would have been in a very different place. But it also gives you the confidence to do this. And they have shown me as well that everything or anything is possible. And just in the last 2 days, 3 days, I have to say even, I raised finance because I want to get some deals, purchase some deals. And I started speaking with friends, and I told them about my investment journey. And some of these friends have seen me from the very start of my journey. So they believe in me and they have seen my progress. And I just got a message now saying that somebody is willing to invest £17,000 with me. And yesterday was £20,000, and the day before £8,500. So within just the space of a few days, I've managed to raise over 20 or 40, yeah, £45,000, something like that. Yeah, and so
you have shown results, right? You have shown results yourself by investing in all the properties in the past. But earlier you mentioned at the beginning you didn't know what you're doing, quite amateur. But how did you get into real estate investing, why not ETF? Why not other stuff? Why real estate?
Oh, yeah. At that time, it was 2008. So we're looking at what? 13 years ago. I don't think I knew about ETF at that time. Crypto, definitely not. And property is very solid investment because it's bricks and mortar. You can feel the asset. And I was living in the UK at that time. I was working in Cambridge. And of course, it's on everybody's mind. Somebody wants to own a piece of property. And that was on my mind as well. And I think at that time, we already bought a property. So this was just like, I just saw the opportunity. And I think this is what I'm good at. I'm good at spotting opportunities, see potential. When I look around, I see that there's something unique about it. And that this is a long-term investment. And properties tend to go up in value over time because of inflation, because of the demand, because of population. There's so many different factors. And property, you can also borrow money. So you can leverage the power. So if a property costs $100,000, you don't need to bring $100,000 in cash to buy it, to control it. You just need maybe 25%. Whereas if you're buying shares or ETF and other things, I think in the usual case, you would have to raise the full amount. Of course, again, there are hedges that you can do. But in general, you would have to buy the asset outright with your money.
Yeah. And then in the intro, I talked about you invested in 34 units. That mm-hmm. was before the mastermind journey.
No, that was actually during the mastermind, and that was as a result of the mastermind, because the people who offer these opportunities, they were part of the mastermind community, so there was a bit of trust. But as always, whenever you invest, you always have to do your due diligence. You always have to, you know, check the facts, verify them, understand the risks. With every investment, even if people guarantee you a fixed amount, fixed return, there are always, always risks involved. You just have to understand the risks, try to minimize them, and then make an informed decision if you want to go ahead. And you should always be prepared that if you were to lose that money, then this is something that you're willing to lose. Although the chance of this happening could be smaller than the chance of you gaining the money. But this, and this is not financial advice, by the way, I have to be very clear on that.
This is not the financial advice. Let's talk about financial education. Then what is the method you're using to evaluate a property, if it's a good one or if it's not a good for you to invest?
Yeah. Very important to actually understand the basic financial education and knowledge, because I think a lot of people lack this. We don't learn about this at school. So this is, if you're street smart, you learn about it. When you are looking at or assessing a deal, you have to understand how much you have to put into the deal, how much it generates, and then you work out your return on investment, which is usually if I put in 100,000 and I get 10,000 per year, then I take the 10,000 divided by 100,000, and that's 10%. So my return on investment is 10%. Now, with the bank, you get less than 1%, even minus. And with some shares or some funds, you may be getting 5%, which is still quite decent. So this is how I evaluate whether it's worth investing in a deal or not. And of course, there could be higher return investments, but they could be also higher risks involved in those. But the important thing is to understand the underlying transaction. So when somebody says to me, if you invest in this, you could get 5 or 10 or 15% return, then I have to understand, how do they use the money to invest? How does the transaction flow from one party to another? And because I'm a lawyer, I do have an advantage in assessing the risk from a contract perspective to understand who signs which contracts with who guarantees, what happens if one party doesn't honor the contract, what happens if one party goes bankrupt, then how do you recover your money? How do you deal with the risk? How can you mitigate the risks? And the due diligence that you have to do before you make any investment is to understand, how solid is this person or this company that you're investing with? Do they have funds? Do they have assets? If something were to go wrong, how do you pursue them? Yeah, but I just want to mention something as well. I think this is really touching the core of this, and what you're doing is the money mindset. And this is very important. And for me, this has changed a lot. If you talk to me a year ago, my money mindset was very different. different from what it is.
How so? Can you tell us a little bit more? What's the
difference? Yes, definitely. So we are conditioned to think in a certain way because of the way we grew up, because of the way society has put us into these boxes, your education, from your parents, from your peers, from your environment, from school. We are trapped into thinking that we have to do well in school so that we can go to university, get good grades, and then get a good job, enter this rat race, which everyone else is doing. And then you work your way up, you make money, you buy bigger assets, you buy a bigger house, you have cars and holidays, but you're still trading your time for money. And this may never be financially free, because to be financially free, that means that your efforts will not correlate to the output. So you could put in a little bit of effort and you could have infinite return, or you could have money coming in on a weekly basis, monthly basis, but you don't have to do any more work for that. And for me, that is financial freedom. I do the work once and it keeps coming in. And whether I sleep or I work, the money is still coming in. And for me, that is passive income. Whereas if you go to work and you work for someone else or you work for yourself, you're trading your time for money. And getting an education, doing another qualification, getting an MBA, whatever, you're still trading your time for money if you work for someone. You're just getting a higher rate per hour. Yeah. And then the mindset before is, oh, to invest, you need to have money. And that was how I thought about it before. And this stops a lot of people from investing because they haven't got the funds, they haven't got the deposit. But during these different masterminds, we learn to invest with other people's money. We learn to leverage. We learn to raise finance. We learn to look at your assets. How can you sweat your assets? Do you have equity? Can you release equity? Because a lot of people also, for example, if they have a property, a house, and they bought it for many years, and the house has gone up in value, there is equity in the property, but they don't know how to release this equity because the mindset is, I need to reduce my debts. I need to clear the debts. I need to have a debt-free house because I want to live in a house with no mortgage or debt. But the debt on your house is usually going to be the lowest debt that you can actually get. All the other debts are going to be more expensive. So the mindset here is to teach you to say that anything you want to do is possible. Now, you know, if you want to achieve a certain financial goal, or even a goal, you just need to be a bit more creative if you don't have access to resources. And it makes you very resourceful because you now have to think outside of the box in order to achieve the same results as other people who have access to funding or who have access to a large network.
Yeah, to activate your assets. Some assets, they are dormant, not activated. Think of outside of the box. Like one of very typical example we like to use is the cars, right? Mm-hmm. So a lot of people have their car sitting in their garage and the car depreciates all the time. But the car on your balance sheet is assets, but this asset is not cash generating assets. Mm-hmm. So what if you can rent out your car? Now your car start to make money for you and then your car is a cash generating asset. Yeah. Same with your house. You can rent an extra room. You can do Airbnb if you have like a basement. Yeah, this is a very good point. And after doing this mastermind educational group, what is your plan using real estate investment to achieve the financial freedom? What's your like blueprint?
Yeah, I think the blueprint would be to first, you need to go through the education. You need to have an open mind. You need to be able to learn new things and understand finances and understand investment, compound interest, and all of that, and be open to just receive all of this knowledge and income and the network. And then I think the first foundation would be to generate cash flow. This is very important because with the cash flow, you are then able to step out of your day job, to step out of a job that pays you a salary, because that ties in your time. Because what you're doing is, again, you're trading your time for money. So you need to get the foundation, get the cash flow, pay for your expenses. And once your expenses have been paid for, or you can cover that, then the next step would be to increase your cash flow to give you that lifestyle that you have designed for yourself or you want. And once you have the cash flow coming in, and cash flow does not necessarily mean that you have to own assets. You just need to control assets. Yeah, so these units that we are talking about, we don't own them. We control them in some ways, but they generate cash. Yeah. After that, you then start acquiring assets. When your cash flow is good, You can then use the cash flow to put down money for deposit, for purchases. And so the idea is you need to then build your capital and allow that capital to grow, because over 10, 15, 20 years, the capital will continue to grow. Whereas your cash flow, if it's tied to a product or a contract, once that contract finishes, there is nothing else that will generate money for you. Yeah. So then the asset will then be. So the idea then is to probably reach about 1 million in assets. And then with that asset, you then can maybe generate 10% of cash flow. And that's 100,000. So that means that your passive income is going to be 100,000. Now you can just work out whether you want 100,000 a month or 100,000 a year.
Yeah.
But, and yeah, so but if... Go ahead.
Sorry, in order to accumulate this 1 million assets, just an example here, maybe some people just need 500,000. People still need to understand how to boost up their earning power and saving rate. And then to make this the earning and the expense, the gap as big as possible to fast track your saving. Then, like you said too, this is your initial capital. Then you deploy your initial capital on real estate investment and other investments.
Yeah. So, of course, in order to achieve the numbers that you want, you can then either decrease your spending so that you have more available to invest. You can also increase your cash flow or your investment or your return. But if you do both at the same time, the impact is going to be bigger. Because at some point, we don't need to spend more money on our living expenses. At some point, we will reach a saturation point where we're happy with what we are, and then it's just increasing the cash flow. But the best part, of course, is at the initial stages that you reinvest the money that you make, so you have that compound effect. Because for some people, they're happy that they receive this money and then they start spending this money and they start spending bigger. So you're not really necessarily better off if you start spending more, because at the end of the day, you just have nothing left to invest.
Yeah, like you told us about the story earlier. You quote yourself as the amateur real estate investor because you are spending the cash flow that you get from your investment. And nowadays you reinvest the cash flow you get from your investment. Invest in real estate properties.
So it's in real estate projects. And the reason why I have also started going into crypto as well, because it's very difficult to stay away from crypto if you're an investor. And right now the market is very buoyant and everyone is doing it, and you're like, oh, there's no way I cannot do it. But then there are shares, there are other things that you can also invest in. I just prefer the real estate market, and especially in the UK, because first of all, I've lived in the UK, I understand the market, I understand the dynamics, the demand and supply. But also the law tends to be in favor of the landlord, and this is good for investments if you want to hold assets and you want to own properties. In some other countries, the law is in favor of the tenants. So if they don't pay, it's very difficult to take control of the property. And if they don't pay, you're losing money. So you need to have a cash buffer to factor in these things. And the UK, because property prices are much cheaper than in Switzerland, you can get loans. Even if you're a foreign investor, you can set up a company. So there are a lot of factors that favor investors in the UK. People ask, why don't I invest in Switzerland in properties? It's just you're looking at much bigger stake, much bigger initial capital. And it's just right now, if it's about investing, it's just looking for the right assets or opportunities where you can make the most of your money.
And you talk about financing in UK. How can someone get bank financing to invest in real estate property? What are the banks looking at to decide?
Yeah, so there are many lenders. So there are choices. What they're looking at is the assets that you are acquiring, how the ability for you to repay the loan or the interest through what the assets generate. So this is what they're looking at. They're not necessarily looking at you as a person, whether you can afford to pay. So it's the underlying assets that you are investing in. Yeah.
And does the investor need to prepare a lot of cash upfront, or what is for investment, what is the minimum down payment in UK?
Normally you're looking at around 25% as a minimum. If you're a foreign investor, you probably will have to pay a bit higher interest than domestic investors. But again, you can go from 25% to whatever you have. The more you have, the easier it is for you to get a loan, the easier it is, maybe you get better rates. Usually there is a minimum amount that the lenders will lend, because otherwise it's not worth it for them to lend 15, 20, 30,000. It's just a lot of paperwork and you have to pay, you know, admin fees. But it's quite open. In the UK, you can look at, in the north, in Scotland, you can look at properties worth £40,000. Down London, you can be looking at several million for a property. But yeah, there are prices, all kinds of prices in the UK. Whereas in Switzerland, I think you can, minimum property price would be like 400,000 or 500,000, right?
Yes, at the minimum, there's a cap on the minimum, but there's no cap on the maximum. But in UK, yeah, there's a wide range for different investors. Yeah. What are the metrics you are looking at? Earlier, you mentioned about like 10% cash on cash return. Is 10% is a good indicator, or what are the other indicators you're looking at?
To be honest, because right now in this property world and I'm in these communities, I see what is possible and understand the underlying transactions. So the investments I am looking at, they could range between 30 to 60%. And people, when they hear about this, they're like, this is crazy. This is madness. There must be some sort of scam. But it's just like, when you don't control, when you don't own a property and you control the property through different methods and different ways, it's very possible to achieve 15, 20, 30%. Because remember that the return on investment is calculated based on how much you receive divided by how much you put in. Yeah. So for me, those figures are possible, but it's to understand the underlying transaction and what I do. Because the more people you have in the transaction, the lower the margins are going to be. So I was talking about return on investment, how you calculate it. So basically, the amount that you receive from the investment divided by how much you have invested. Now, if you were to buy a property, you would need to put down a 25% deposit. Then you have to pay tax or land transaction taxes and so on. Then you have to pay for legal fees. You have to pay for surveyor's fees. If you instead control a property by renting it from the landlord and then rent it out again to somebody else, you don't have those costs. So the cost that you may have is maybe you have to renovate a little bit. Maybe you have to pay 1 month rent in advance to the landlord. So these costs are very minimal. And if the property is brand new, there's not even renovation costs. You may have to put down a deposit, a small deposit, to guarantee the rent for 1 month and then 1 month's rent in advance. So maybe you're looking at 2 months of rent, and that's all the money that you have to put down. And therefore your return then increases massively, because the money that you make from this, you just divided that by the money that you have invested in it. Yeah.
Yeah. Is this one you talk about, is you rent from people who own these assets, and then you renovate it, and then you rent these assets out to other people with a premium. So that's why the cash you invested is minimum, but then the return is the difference between what you rented out and what you rented from the landlord.
Yes, because if you offer the landlord a fixed rent for 5 years, for example, it becomes very enticing for the landlord, because now they don't have to worry about void periods, meaning like nobody's going to live in there, the tenant moves in, moves out. In that way, you just tell them, look, I rent from you, I pay you every single month for this amount of money. It's going to be a little bit less than the market rate, but at least you have the comfort and you have the certainty that you will receive rent every single month. You don't deal with any tenants, and I will manage the property. I will then put tenants in there. I will check them in, check them out, sort out if there's any repairs that needs to be done. I will do all of that. So then what you can do then is you benefit from a lower rent first, and second, if the law allows it, you can then rent it out as Airbnb or service accommodation, where you charge a nightly rate instead of a monthly rate. And this way, you increase the rental income.
And this way, for the investors, if they don't have this 25% cash ready to acquire asset, they can still get their foot in the door, start to earn the cash flow, right?
Yes. So this is a strategy that many people, many investors use when they start out and they don't have the capital to buy a property. And so when I started looking at investments, I thought, this is not for me. This is a strategy for people who don't have money. And I had managed to raise some money, so I had a pot of money that I could invest. But the more I thought about it, I thought, why wouldn't I do this? This is so lucrative. This is so easy to make money. And it's so quick, because if you have, if you get control of a property, you can rent it out immediately. If you buy a property, it's going to take you at least 3 months or so in the UK anyway, because of paperwork and registration. And so I initially planned this only for short term, but now I just realized that it should always, I should always have this strategy in my investment portfolio. And then this will be alongside acquiring properties as well. But this cash flow helps me to, when we have cash flow in a company, we can then use it as a buffer. We can invest in other products, projects where maybe at the beginning it doesn't generate any cash flow because you're not investing in the capital growth. So they usually say you have to choose, do you want cash flow or do you want capital growth? If you, for example, invest in London, then you're looking at capital growth because over time properties tend to go up in value because it's desirable and people invest in London. But in terms of cash flow, it's low cash flow. It's the return investment is very little because the initial investment is so large.
For foreign investors who want to invest in UK, market is great and there are lots of choices in terms of price range and the high demand. How can they set up a business? What is the tax implication? Can you just take us through this process briefly?
I will not be able to tell them about the tax implications because I'm not a tax advisor and I also have to seek my own advice when it comes to taxes. But it's very easy to set up a company in the UK. Anybody can do it. And I've done it. I've set up several companies. It takes only a few days. It doesn't cost very much. You're looking at maybe 50 francs to set it up. And you can set up a business bank account. Again, very easy. So to start and to set up a company is not difficult at all. And usually when you invest, they will tell you, do you want to invest? Do you want the company to buy the assets, control the assets, or do you want to control the assets yourself? And people will have to look at the individual circumstances to see what makes sense. From my perspective, it makes sense to set up a company and allow the company to control the assets and to purchase the assets, because then it's not really personal. It's a business and you have a business structure. But you also have advice from accountants to put this into a business structure. And then you have all the expenses and you maybe corporation tax may be lower than the personal tax. Again, this depends on how much the individual is earning. But I think long term, if you want to do it in a large scale, it should be done through a company structure rather than in the personal capacity.
That's very interesting. For any foreign investors who are not residing in UK and might be interested in this market. Mm-hmm. But one concern most people might have is that they are not living in the UK, the properties are so far away from them. Would that be a risk? Would there be any problems managing those properties?
They should know that I live in Switzerland and I invest in the UK. I'm not there. I sometimes haven't even seen the properties. I don't manage the properties because my whole strategy is about remote investing. I don't plan to move there just to control the properties. And so the remote investing works for me. It can work for other people too. I hear comments from people in the UK saying, Lisa, you're amazing. You invest from Switzerland and you control properties in the UK. And even in my city, and the lady told me, I live in the city, but I don't have any properties here. How do you do it? And I told them, look, I only work with strategies that work in this way because I don't want to manage properties and I don't want to manage people. My time is too valuable to do this because then I just trade my time for money again. And this is a very dangerous trap to go into because when people start investing, start buying properties, they always think I should be there to you know, sort out any problems they have, to take care of the tenants. But then you're just doing somebody else's job. Your time is too valuable. Pay somebody to do that and factor that cost into your investment criteria so that you only invest in deals that will allow you the right return, factoring into all of these costs.
If you are not there physically, how mm-hmm. are you going to find the right person to manage property for you that you can trust? I think generally it's the biggest barrier for a lot of investors who invest overseas.
Yeah, so you can invest in deals that will give you the full package. So they manage the property for you. And I do have, we have investment in those deals as well. So I'm trying out different strategies. I'm trying out different setups to see which one works best for us. And then in some cases, I have been recommended a management company. So then we use them. And of course, there will be pitfalls in everything that you do. You just have to try them out, but you just have to have a plan B in place in case one thing doesn't work. And I can give you an example. We have a property that we rent from the landlord. It's in Reading. And the management company was good to start with, but then they had problems. And in the end, they didn't pay us. So they still owe us money for 1 month's rent or a little bit more. But we had an open communication, and I'm trying to be understanding here and see that, okay, there are problems. And we're going to work out a payment plan. So they decided that they can maybe pay us on a weekly basis, and then over a number of weeks that we can then recover that money. But what we had to do is we had to control, and we had to transfer the management over to another company. And that company is now running this property for us, and it's now making money again. We are getting bookings. So these things will happen at some point. You just have to be prepared, and you just have to not take it too personally. Money, in my view, if I lose a bit of money, that's okay, because money can be made. I can make money later on. Yeah.
Yeah. And what are the mistakes people make in real estate investment that you want to highlight here so that they can avoid?
Yeah. So some people invest without doing the due diligence. They just trust the other person too much. They just throw money at them, and then later on, they don't get the money, and they then try to recover this money. And it's very stressful, because I've come across people like that. They say, look, I lent money to this person, and we were friends and all of that. I said, well, did you have a contract in place? No, we didn't have a contract. As a lawyer, I will always try to get people to think about these things. And then some of them say, yeah, we did have a contract, but now they're not paying. So what do I do? So I've come across people like that. So there's this trust that you, of course, if you're going to work with people, you need to trust them, but you also need to verify what they're telling you. And to be honest, the experience I've been through is that people invest in people they trust. So this would be your friends, your family. They want to help you out. They don't necessarily invest in projects that you bring to them, because for them, it's just like they can't assess the risks. They put the risk with you. And if they've known you for a while and you keep your words and you deliver on your promises, then they will continue to invest with you. Because people who don't know how to invest the money, they have money sitting there, but they don't know what to do with the money, and they don't know who they can trust. So this is finding a right balance between giving them the rewards and that they trust you and that you deliver on your promises.
Mm-hmm. And how are you going to scale up with your real estate properties? Are you going to make it bigger, or is this an amount that you are happy with and you are going to stick with that?
No, I'm not there yet. This is only the early stages. We have some success. We're making some money. But again, that money is being reinvested. That money is being used to pay back the investors. We are going to compound it. So the next step, the next little scale up, is actually to do block of flats, to do bigger developments. So you're not just buying one individual unit, you're buying like 20, 30, 50 units. It could be that you buy a block of flats and you renovate it, you change purpose from commercial to residential, or the other way around, and you look at land opportunities. There's just different projects that you can look at. Again, I'm going to mention a few of these things. They're very advanced. For beginners, it will be difficult to understand the concepts. You can also be looking at purchase lease options, different ways to control a property. And flipping, meaning you buy for a lower price, you renovate, you sell it for a higher price. But the scaling up is in making it big and not just do individual units.
Yeah, so you put your effort one time, but it's on a scale rather than individual units that you need to renovate, find the contractor, check the, exactly. Then you put too much time into, exchange for the capped return. Okay, then now you talk about you have some passive income. Is there any difference that you observed in your lifestyle now you are earning passive income compared to before?
Yes, of course. You just have more freedom to do what you want to. But remember also the passive income that is being generated from these investments, they go into the company. So I am not spending this money. This is the company's money, and that money is being reinvested. So I still continue my life as usual. It's only at some point when there is enough money in the company that you can then start withdrawing the money, and then you can start living on this money. So at the initial stages, yes, there's money coming in, there's profit made, but I'm not touching this money.
Yeah, but it's helping you building up the foundations towards the ultimate financial freedom.
Yeah, and it also gives you confidence, that you can do this, that you see the money coming in. And that, I think, is a big boost for anyone when they start seeing money rolling in.
Yeah. And then since if you invest in 1, 10, 20, 30 units and you generate positive cash flows and you can just literally replicate it, you can do the 50s mm-hmm. and the 100.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the goal here is to work out how much you want for your cash flow to live the life that you want. If you say it's 10,000 a month, then you work out how many deals do you need to do to reach 10,000. And then you work out how long is it going to take you, because if you can only buy one deal every 6 months, then that's going to take you a number of months or a number of years. And then you just have to break it down to understand what you need to do on a monthly basis.
Do you think everybody can achieve financial freedom with real estate investment?
Only if they have the right mindset. So it starts with the mindset. You don't need to have all the money. You don't even need to have any money to start investing, because you can leverage on other people's money. But you need to have the right mindset. You need to have the support. And you also need to work hard. You cannot just sit there and wait for money to fall down and then just say, I have the money now to go out and invest. But yeah, anyone can do it. I've seen other people who had no financial knowledge or property experience. They've done it even before me. I've seen a 20-year-old achieving financial freedom, stop working. Yeah, so it's possible.
Thank you so much for being here and open my mind or the audience mind. Mm-hmm. They now exposed to another type of real estate investment. Not just you have to have a lot of money, buy a house, rent it out, but mm-hmm. you also can think about how to leverage other people's assets, but you mm-hmm. take control over and then yes. generate cash flow. Very interesting. Yeah. What if some of our audience are very interested in learning more from you, investing mm-hmm. in real estate property, investing in UK, where can they mm-hmm. find you?
Yeah, they can contact me, definitely. Should I give you my email address or will you be putting that down in the, somewhere? Yeah.
Okay, then I will put your email address in the show notes, if you don't mind.
Not, yeah. They're very welcome to approach me. And if I can inspire people, I would be very happy to do that. And it could be about anything. It could be about writing a book. It could be about investments. It could be about anything that is interesting for them.
Thank you so much for being here with us, Lisa.
Thank you, Yasi, for giving me this opportunity. Thank you for listening.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Fast Track Podcast. Show me your support by liking this episode and sharing it with a friend. Join the Facebook group at Fast Track Podcast 1, or you can find us on Instagram, YouTube, and of course the homepage, fasttrack.life. See you in the next episode.